Hello, beautiful people. Welcome to another episode of Nick and Garrett Get Serious About Jokes. I am Nick.
And I'm Garrett.
Right, and we're just here to talk to you each week about just comedy, joke writing, what it's like being amateur stand-up comics in a major or mid-major city. We live in the Nashville area. As always, we're brought to you by Eastside Legal in East Nashville, Tennessee. That's Eastside Legal, LLC. If you have any questions, whether they be about bankruptcy law, family law, criminal law, the attorneys at Eastside Legal can help you answer your questions or point you to someone who can. That's Eastside Legal, LLC. And we are also brought to you by Card and Illustration for your illustrating needs. The artist is one person who owns her own business, can help you at Card and Illustration. She just finished working on some stuff for the Ryman, the historic Ryman Auditorium. And so I think she has a few openings in her schedule. So that is Cardin Illustration. All right. Now that we get that out the way, let's jump into this week's convo. We're going to do worst shows.
Yeah.
Worst shows that we've been a part of. And I guess that can mean a lot of things. I just meant worst for me, like my worst experiences. I mean, the shows themselves, I know one of them was actually a good show. It just wasn't, it just didn't go well for me.
Right.
So
wasn't your show.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
I'll start off with it because I think the reason why we came up with this idea was because of last week's show, what happened last week at an open mic where me and another comic, Brad Stiva, got kicked out of this place, and I called D's Country Lounge. I didn't know if I wanted to say it on the pod just because I didn't want to give them any type of credit or anything or any type of exposure. But
you're going for the call-outs.
Do what?
You're calling for the call-outs, just...
Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't want to call it. But, I told you the story last week, and we were going to do it last week, but I think by the time we were going to record, I had talked about it so many times that I just had to take a break from it.
Yeah. But, I think it was probably best to, like, wait a week so you had time to, like, I don't know, think about it in your head, because it was kind of a shitty circumstances. But anyway,
you're right. I think the extra time has also helped me kind of get the story to where it's smooth, to where it goes smoothly. So I feel like I've been able to highlight the main points of the story without it dragging on too much. If you're in the Nashville area, if you're in the very narrow Nashville area comedy scene, this was huge for about all of last week. It was a big deal that me and Brad got kicked out and everything, but it's one of those things that you kind of expect to happen with comedy occasionally, but then when it does happen, it throws you for a loop a little bit. So what happened, me and Holly, She and I, we drove to D's Country Lounge to do an open mic. She's not a comedian. She's just a fan of comedy, and she'll come to shows with me. And I go to the bathroom first thing, and then she buys me a beer. I come back. I go to get the beer, and this guy's talking to her. And when I come up there, his whole face changes, and Holly's white, I'm black, and the guy who's white, he was like, "Oh, hey, what's your name?" And I was like, "It's Nick." And he goes, "Oh, Mick? Oh, so you're Irish. You're an Irish Mick." I was like, "No, that's not what I said." And then he goes, "What are you doing here?" I was like, "Well, I'm one of the comics." And he goes, "Oh, so you're Jewish, right? You're a Jew." I was like, I just was like, "Yeah, yep, that's right. I'm Jewish." And then the conversation just kind of gets weird, but not like in a threatening way. So I'll end up leaving and going to talk to some other comics. And then like maybe a minute later, I saw Holly walking away from him. So anyway, I go to do my set, and, you know, I'm trying a lot of new material, and the set starts out okay, and then with the new stuff, it doesn't go great, but it's not, you know, terrible. And I can tell, like, dude is, like, laughing, but he's laughing at, like, during the setups of jokes and clapping during parts where you're not supposed to be and just trying to throw me off. And I remember at one point telling him to shut up from stage. Like, I didn't yell it, but I just kind of was in the middle of setting up a joke. I said shut up, and then I kept going. But then afterwards, he, like, tries to shake my hand, and I won't shake his hand. He's like, no, man, I think you did a good job, for real. And then for the next 10 minutes or so, he's just talking to me. Like, nothing, you know, acting like he's trying to be my friend or whatever, but he could tell that I'm trying to pay attention to the other comics. So Brad Sativa comes in, another comic, another black comic, and he's not even performing. He just was there to shoot a promo video. I told him, I was like, hey, man, I'm probably going to leave in a few if you want to ride with me. He's like, yeah. So me, Holly, and Brad, we get ready to leave. We go outside. And that one dude was there, and he had two friends with him. And one of his friends goes, hey, good set tonight. I was like, oh, thanks. And he goes, you were the funniest one I saw. I was like, I appreciate it. He goes, well, you're the only one I saw, so I guess that's why you were funny. And I was like, okay. And then he said, it wasn't anything you said. It was just that you was it's just funny to see a black dude wearing a DuckTales t-shirt. So then I was like, well, that's cool. It's funny seeing a white dude wearing a dumbass black shirt, because he had it on a black tee. So then Brad says something smart-ass to him. And then we're getting ready to leave. And the third guy goes, get out of here. Bye. I turned around. I was like, what? He said, bye. Bye. Get out of here. And so I start walking back up the stairs. And I was like, don't tell me what to do, you know. And I was like, he's like, bye. Bye. And I was like, oh, you're bi. Okay, okay. You can suck his dick if you want to, if you're bi. Just, kind of, you know, just, again, trying to come back and forth. And then he goes, leave now or you'll be sorry. I was like, what? He said, leave now or you'll be sorry. And he's bigger than me, but I'm like, he wasn't, like, tougher. Like, you can tell how, like, some dudes you just don't want to mess with. But, I mean, he was, like, bigger and heavier. So he stands up, and I'm like, okay, we're getting ready to fight. And then instead, he walks past me and kind of bumps me as he's walking past me. And then he comes back with the owner of the bar, and the owner yells at the first dude who had originally been, you know, talking to Holly, you know, and had tried to throw me off during my set. She starts yelling at him, and then she turns to me and says, you have to leave. And I was like, why do I have to leave? And then they were like, you need to leave right now. So it was the three guys, the owner, and then a couple of the other employees that, like basically, you know, confronting me, making me leave. And I was like, I didn't even do anything. I mean, we were leaving anyway, but the fact that, you know, dude said what he said, and then now they're trying to force me to leave. And so Brad says something, and then, now I will mention at this point, the owner was drunk, and or at least had a Coors Light in her hand and seemed drunk. And she and Brad start arguing, and she says something like, get your black dick out of here, or something like that. So then Brad says, bitch, I can fuck you better than your husband can. And so then they get, that gets another, you know, some more yelling. So we end up leaving eventually, and some other comics leave without doing their sets. And I was on the way home, I was talking to Brad, and apparently that same dude had been harassing him, like threw up a Hitler sign, and then was like, oh, sorry about that, I was just joking around, it's a joke me and my friends do. And there was another black comic there that night, Vala Bird. We found out later that he had done, like, some of the same stuff to her as well, that dude. And so, yeah, and the guy who was like, leave now or you'll be sorry, he was out there, but apparently he was an employee. So I guess he was off the clock or whatever. But, you know, instead of just, I guess, let things, you know, because we were already leaving, instead of just letting things fizzle out, he goes and, like, you know, first of all, Garrett, you know this. You can't say to someone, you'll be sorry, and then get up and tattle. Like, if you say you'll be sorry and then stand up, it's like you got to fight at that point, right? But he went and tattled, and because, I mean, I think it could have been handled without her, you know what I mean, coming out there anyway. And so, of course, the next day I wake up, I have a bunch of text messages and Facebook messages of people saying, hey, look, I'm not going back there. Saw what happened, blah, blah, blah. And it was one of those things where, I mean, it was kind of cool to see everyone in the Nashville comedy community, you know, kind of rally around us. And I remember one comic was like, so who was the owner? And I was like, the woman that Brad was arguing with was like yelling at. And then they were yelling back and forth. And this one dude, he's like a newer comic, Matt, you know, Matt Taylor. And he goes, that was the owner? I thought that was just some drunk lady that was just there, you know? So anyway, Brad Sativa has a kind of a funnier version of his account of the events on Facebook. And he posted it last week. And apparently the owner tried to call one of the other comics to try to get him to take it down. He said, all right, if she posts an apology on her page, I'll take it down. And she didn't do it. So it's still up there. And so, yeah, there's, you can go on their Facebook page. A lot of comics left negative reviews and about it. So there is no more, there will not be any more comedy there at that place. Basically, it happened Tuesday night. By Wednesday afternoon, it was like no one's going to do comedy there anymore. So that's what happened. That's probably my worst show. But some things did come from it. The co-host of that show was out of town last week, and I ran to her I ran to her 2 days ago, and she was just like, Nick motherfucking Bush. I was like, what? She's like, man, you have no idea how much street cred you got now. And I was like, I don't know. It seemed like some good things happened from it. Another comic, Dusty Slay, who is the one who initially convinced them to have the comedy show. And he's probably, I would say, the most famous, you know, Nashville comic, you know, done Jimmy Kimmel and everything. You know, he hit me up. Yeah, he hit me up and apologized and was like, listen, man, I feel like I have, you know, some responsibility because I'm the one who convinced them to have this show. And, I mean, he knows them, and I'm sure he's had really positive interactions with the owner. But he was just like, I do feel responsibility to the community. He's like, I don't want the you know, Nashville comedy scene to have, you know, these negative experiences, you know, and he ended up putting me, he had a show on Thursday. So he was like, if you have 5 to 7 clean minutes, I'd love for you to do my show on Thursday. I was like, yeah. So I did a show at Zany's. It was like my third Zany's show. And, and he had been trying to get me on his show before. Like, he had Facebooked me a couple months ago about being on the show. And I think this kind of maybe helped push things in that direction. So that was good. And, every comic has been, great. And there was even a musician who used to perform at D's a lot, and he knows the owners, and I've known him for a while, and he hit me up and was just like, hey, I don't know the particulars, but man, you know, just basically offering apologies too. There was a crazy night, but I think one of the things it did teach me was that I need to be more, I need to have more, not just, because I mean, you know this, the secret to comebacks is speed more so than quality. And I know that. So, but I think I do need to work on being mean so that I can shut things like that down quickly. You know, which I've had, like, I have moments where I've even had moments at D's where I've been able to kind of shut down a heckler with saying something, but it's not a consistent thing. And that's so that did teach me that. And so that was a good lesson for me. And anyway, so that is my first, bad story or worse show.
At least there's it's so bizarre to me, the story, because it's like, it ends with her telling you to leave, and you were, like, already leaving. It just seems so weird to me, because it's like, I don't know. It's like, you know, you have to deal with people, I guess, who just are trying to start stuff wherever you go. And that's just the whole thing is dumb. But at least there's like a positive outcome, at the very least, for the community.
Yeah.
You know, coming around to you guys.
Well, it's a positive. And honestly, that mic probably needed to end. I mean, one guy took a swing at another comic, like a bar regular, while he was on stage. This was a couple months ago, or maybe a couple weeks ago.
Well, I have to ask, what was the joke that preceded the fucking punch?
Well, I wasn't there that night. I just saw it on someone's Instagram story. But apparently Matt Boyd was singing Uptown Boogie, and some guy was drunk, and he didn't like it. He was walking towards stage, and went to try to punch him. And then I don't know if you know Carl Burrell, but he's a big dude, a bigger comic, and he grabbed the guy, and, you know. But the interesting thing was, you know, the day after everything happened at D's, the owner of D's, she put as her Facebook profile pic a picture of her and that guy who went to take a swing at Matt Boyd. Now,
Now
here's the thing. They have pictures together. They're probably friends anyway. And I'm sure they're not friends because of that incident. You know, you took a swing at a comic, so now we're cool. But you know what I mean? But I think, though,
yeah, right.
I think that it was almost like a little bit of like slick trolling happening, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe she might not have been thinking about it, but it is one of the things that someone noticed. Yeah.
Right.
So, yeah, anyway, enough of my story. What about yours, man? What about yours?
Well, I'm pretty sure I haven't told this on the podcast before, so we'll go ahead and get into it. This is one that was, there was nothing that happened. Like, there was no fights or anything involving me. But it was just, like, a bad place in general. And so, basically, every time we went, the show was always bad. And it was when I had first started. It was actually the first or second bar I had done comedy at, because you know I started going to open mics on campus at MTSU, and that was great. And then we were meeting these people, and they were like, "We're trying to get this mic started, and we're going to do rotating host, and the owner wants to have comedy here, and he says he's going to pay the host." Spoilers, the owner never paid anybody, and we were all sort of part of it, and I ended up helping a lot and trying to advertise, and I hosted several times, never paid anybody, and it was a huge waste of time, and it left me with the impression, and it was a mic in Murfreesboro at a bar called like the Wheel Lounge. And I don't know if you know it, but it's a pretty shady bar.
Shady or shitty?
Well, both.
Oh, okay.
So I meant to say shady, but shitty also works. it was just like a bad environment. Like, you know, there were signs. Like, you walk in and there's literally like a Confederate flag like hanging in the window. And it's like, oh, God. And there's, like, three or four people in there. And, like, it was just really, really shady. And looking back, I kind of am, like, thinking, like, why did I keep going back there? But, you know, at the time, I had just started comedy, and I was super excited about it. And, you know, it was just one of those things where you look back and you're like, that was dumb. But, like, there was just a few people there, and nothing would ever happen. There was a few people there, usually, and so there was never much of a crowd. People didn't really listen. I remember one time the most audience participation we got was one of the comics was like performing or whatever, and there was a guy on at the bar playing one of like the, you know, sometimes they have like bar games or whatever.
Yeah.
Like a touchscreen thing. And his back was turned to the comic. So the comic like says something to him trying to get him to participate. And the guy doesn't even stop playing his game, but he lifts up one of his hands and just flicks off the comic and keeps, like, playing his game. And the comic, like, laughs about it and, like, plays it off. And he's like, great, that's exactly what I wanted. But that was literally the only audience participation that happened, like, the whole night. And then, you know, like, the host, the owner of the bar would get up every night and, like, tell the same jokes. And it was, like, a whole thing. And then one time, one comic said, like he made, like, a dead baby joke or whatever, which it wasn't great. I mean, it was just a joke. But this guy got so offended. And he was, like, he had, like, a total, like he came there with a crackhead, like kind of thing. Like, he was pretty nuts. And he, like, tried to fight this comic. And it was crazy because he was, like, twice his age. And it's like, what are you doing? It wasn't exactly a show, but the whole situation was just, like, really shitty. And looking back, I'm just glad that, like, I don't go there anymore, because it was a really bad vibe.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like it. And is that place still around?
Well, they don't do comedy, but the bar still is. Jeez. I think.
Wow. Well, who was it? Was it Will?
Will Nolan?
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Well, so Will was the host of the Mic on Campus.
Right.
And
right.
So that's where I met him, and you know that, but just people listening, and so. That's where I met him, and we were doing comedy there, and it was great. And then these people came in. This guy named Rusty came in. He was like, I'm from out of state. I'm a comic, and I'm trying to get into Nashville stuff. And, you know, he brought some of his friends, and, you know, I ended up becoming friends with them, and they're cool, and they're fine, whatever. But they were like, we're having this thing. They're interested in coming to our mic, so that's how we met them. But then they were like, we're trying to get a mic started, and we want you to come and help us out. And like, he was telling Nick about it, like trying to fire him up about, like, you know, you get paid and stuff. And I remember talking to Nick, and he was like, I kind of don't think anybody's gonna get paid, like, before we had even gone the first time. So he kind of was like, he was pretty skeptical.
Is this Nick Woodruff?
I meant to say Will.
Oh, okay,
sorry. I got you. Will Nolan was sort of just, like, suspicious about it the whole time, and he was right to be, because, you know, nothing happened. But, yeah, the person who kind of set it up and worked with the owner was Rusty, and then eventually everyone who was a part of it was just like, this is a waste of time.
I can't imagine how bad it would have to be for comics to be, because usually if there's a place that's willing to give you stage time, We'll come back, even if it's free, because even we're not getting paid, because we'll get the work, you know, get that work in. But
right,
it almost seems like it's counterproductive, which is surprising, because you wouldn't think that stage time would be counterproductive. But in certain environments, it would almost be better to stay home and just work on writing, or
it's like, if I want to practice performing a joke and, like, practice timing in front of no one, I can do that, like, in my bathroom, or in, you know, anywhere. I can do that in my bedroom, or whatever, you know, to practice, like, you know, getting the timing of a joke down. Like, you know, that's, why would I go somewhere if no one's going to be listening and there's, like, two people there? It's a waste of time. And don't get me wrong, like, you know, there's some mics that are harder, and those are worth going to, because it's like, if you can make them laugh, it's like, you know that you have a good joke.
Yeah.
And there are places where there are laughs that are not guaranteed, where, they will let you bomb in front of them. Like, you make a joke that's not funny, and, you know, nobody laughs. But that is helpful, because you find out something that doesn't work. But there's no way of knowing or learning anything if there's nobody there, and they don't even want to listen to you in the first place.
Yeah. No, I know. I mean, it's... you said that the owner would tell the same jokes, get up there and tell the same jokes.
Over, yeah.
Which kind of, it's weird. It's almost like he wanted to do comedy, so he, orchestrated these comedy nights so that he could just get up and tell jokes.
Yeah.
And tell the same joke.
And like the exactly. And like the first time he told him, it was like okay. But then like he would tell the same jokes and he's like, I remember all these jokes from 10, 20 years ago, and you know, they'll come back to me, but for now I'm just gonna keep telling the same ones. And it was a lot of, it was the type of jokes you would expect from like a 50-something year old bartender.
Right, right.
Or bar owner or whatever. It was the type of jokes you'd expect where it's like, so this joke starts with the kid sitting on the sidewalk eating M&Ms and biting a cat on the ass. And that's like the setup. And like, oh, I don't really want to go through the whole thing, but
right, yeah.
You can kind of fill it in. And so, you know, it was, you know, that was a drag. And the whole mic in general kind of like made me cynical about comedy in Murfreesboro for a while, because like, you know, I've done stuff in Murfreesboro since, and it's been great. In other places, it's been really fun. But after doing that mic, I was like, I don't even know if you can do comedy in Murfreesboro any, you know, at this point. Maybe just Nashville. Like, there's not enough demand in Murfreesboro. I think I was wrong about that. Obviously, there's not as much demand in Murfreesboro as in Nashville, but you know, there's definitely potential for, you know, shows and stuff. So I'm glad, you know, that's one thing that I kind of, quote unquote, learned that I realized wasn't true afterwards. So, you know, that's a good thing. But yeah, the whole situation was just wonky, just weird.
Well, I would say, I mean, I'm glad that show was canceled. I mean, I think we can. We've talked a little bit off air about trying to get some more Murfreesboro stuff going. Because I do think that it's kind of a narrow audience, but there is an audience for it. I mean, I think most Murfreesboro folks don't mind comedy as long as it's not interfering with whatever they're already doing, if that makes sense.
Right.
You know, like if they're at a brewery and it happens, oh, there's a comedy show tonight. As long as it doesn't get in the way too much of,
right.
So anyway, but I could see if that was your first experience, how you just, how like, it can be very easy to be like, nah, I'm not going to do this. I could see how that could be a temptation, but,
yeah, because that was like my first, you know, legitimate exposure to, you know, an actual mic, like at an actual bar. So a part of me was like, is this how it is all the time? And then, you know, obviously I went to Nashville and there's so many great mics there and it's totally different. Like the vibe is just, at most places, obviously, considering your last story, it's not perfect in Nashville. But, you know, there's a lot of places that are really good for comedy and really good for trying new stuff. And most places are really, really welcoming of new people. So I just had to go there and like have that misconception, you know, dealt with, I guess.
Well, do you have any other stories?
This is a lot quicker, but
the reason why I asked is because we're right at the 29-minute mark. We could do a part two of bad shows.
Well, this one is like, it literally is like a couple minutes.
Okay, go ahead.
I would have enough unless you do.
I have one and a half more.
Okay.
So, yeah, I think we just keep it going.
Great, okay. Yeah. Well, this was something that happened, and this is a different scenario because the mic wasn't bad, I was bad, and that kind of feels worse, to be honest, but, you know, obviously everyone has that experience. But this was probably the first time that I had like, done poorly.
Yeah.
I don't think that they have it anymore, but I'm sure you remember, like, the Red Eye comedy show?
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like, the Red Eye open mic?
Yeah.
At Wilburn Street Tavern, and that was a place that I went to probably the second most of like any bar, any mic that I went to in Nashville before. I think that they stopped doing it there because they're renovating it and they're like, it's going to be renovated and they're going to keep doing the mic. But then I think the mic stopped happening.
Yeah.
But anyway, I started going to 10 Dog when I first started going to Nashville, and people there, you know, after everybody's set would come up to me and be like, hey, you should really try Woburn. And I was like, why? And they're like, it's awful. And I was like, why would I want to go there? And they're like, because if you do well there, like, you have a good joke. Because basically the environment at Woburn is, like, it's kind of a late mic. It's pretty much only comics there. Mm-hmm. And it's people that have already probably done their set once or twice that night. And they kind of want to go home. So everyone's just a little bit harder. And even people that you might have seen at another mic, like, because of the environment, they're harder, even though they're the same person. And so it's a really good way to, like, get a vibe for, like, or get a feel for, like, how, I don't know, how things can be hard, especially, you know, just, I don't know. But I thought it was great, and I liked it. And I went, and my first time, I was super nervous because of how badly, not badly, but how harsh people were there. And it ended up going really well. And I was, like, excited, and it went well, and it was great. And the next time I went, I think it went well, and I was excited. Third time I went, I was a little bit, like, probably over, like, confident. Because, like, I had been there twice, and I had done pretty well.
Right, yeah.
Both times. And so I was like, this is nothing to me. But I actually got to see what it really was like that third time, I think. And like, it was just one of those things where, like, I got up and I was, like, you know, overly confident, and I wasn't really in the right mind to perform. And I was just doing these jokes, and it was just to nothing, you know. And, you know, tell the joke, pause, like, silence. Tell the next joke, pause. There's, like, a chuckle in the back, but it might have also been the guy coughing. And, like, you know, it's just the whole set, and it's, like, really uncomfortable. And that was, like, the first time I had done, like, just badly. Because it was really early on in, like,
yeah,
me trying comedy. And that, for me, was a pretty bad experience. Well, it wasn't a bad experience at all. It was just a little bit jarring. It's one of those things where you're like, oh, that sucks. Looking back, you know, I don't regret it at all. I think it was a good experience, but, you know, it wasn't fun.
No, yeah, because Wilbur Street, I don't know what you're talking about, man. Like, it's, yeah, it's the energy. And honestly, I don't think I've ever been there and just, I can't ever remember anyone who was there that was just at that place to drink or to hang out. Like, right. It seems like everyone there was a comic or with a comic, you know?
Right. Yeah.
It was a... And I always felt uneasy there. Like, it's pretty hood down there. Like, in that, just where it's located. And there are places, like, you do comedy at, and you take a turn, and you're just like, oh, man. You know, and, it seems like, even though the owner of Woburn Street, I have nothing but good things to say about her, but it almost seemed like it was, like, location-wise, the equivalent of the wheel. What was it? The broken wheel? What the place you were talking about?
The wheel lounge.
The wheel lounge, like, in terms of, like, location. But, like, every time I pulled up, I was, I mean, you know, you're always watching yourself anyway. But that, I mean, I always parked as close as possible. I feel like there was just an uneasiness anyway, beyond just being late and everyone being tired. It was one of those things where you just go because the momentum of the night, that's just the next stop. But, you know, I would not have left. I would not leave. There's no way I would leave home just to go to that mic. I would just sit it out.
Right.
But it is a, like you were saying, man. All right. Well, I got two more stories, both similar themes. The first one was probably my most embarrassing one. Me and Holly, we went to Chattanooga to do a show at the Comedy Catch, and there's a comic. He lives in Florida, but he's from Chattanooga, named G.R. Goodwin, and every couple months he does a Chattanooga All Stars show. And he, it's like comics from Chat who are from Chattanooga. They may not live there, but they were initially from there, and they do their material. And I'm not from Chattanooga. My family is, but I'm not from there. And so a lot of people invite friends and family, and I had some family members there, and I feel like, you know, like, I'm not as consistent as a comic as I'd like to be anyway. But I think when I'm in front of a mixed crowd, I feel like that's at my best. Like if it's some black folks, some white folks, but this is all black room, and I, kind of have, it's hit and miss with me in all black rooms. And this was a big miss. And, I drove down the Chat that night, and GR introduces me as a Chattanooga, you know, as a guy who's from Chat. And, you know, I get on stage, and you can tell that I'm not from Chattanooga. Like, they, you know what I mean? And not that that's, you know, because if I'm funny, it wouldn't matter. But I think that there was a little bit of an expectation there in the audience. And not that, and then the fact that I wasn't, like my first couple of jokes weren't on point. And then I was given the light, but the guy who was giving me the light was not the person I expected to give me the light. So I thought he was just flashing his cell phone. I just thought he had his cell phone out. So then GR came on stage and got me off stage. And,
damn.
Yeah, it was just weird. Cause I mean, I had like, you know, some cousins in the audience and everything. And then obviously, with black comics, black crowd, like you can't just let that happen. So all the other comics had to get on and roast me. And like after they'd get off stage and they'd just be like, "Hey man, keep your head up. It's happened to me before." Even GR was like, "Hey, it happened to me, you know, at Stardome and you know, in Birmingham, blah blah blah." You know what I mean? He's like, he's like, "Don't let it, you know, discourage you." But I mean, you do have to get roasted. And I think some people thought that I had left, because at the end, they called all the comics on stage. And I remember I was sort of sitting in like this adjoining room watching the football game, because it was a Sunday night football game on. And I heard them tell all the comics that, you know, to come back on stage. So I was like, all right, I'm going to go up there. And then I was like the last one to get on because I was watching the game. And they go, "Oh, man, I guess Nick's not here. I guess y'all ran him back to Nashville or something like that." And I was like, "No, I'm here. And I was like as I was walking on the stage. And then, you know, he was like, "Hey, I just want y'all to know, like, this ain't easy. I give new comics like Nick, you know, a lot of props, blah, blah, blah." You know, just basically, you know, saying, you know, positive things. You know, I think that was the church in him or in them, you know, that made them clap and stuff. But, I mean, I definitely, it caused me to sort of reevaluate how I write jokes. And some of the material, because a lot of times when I'm telling a joke on stage, the ones that I have the most confidence in are the ones where I know there's a definite joke structure versus a funny concept that I'm going to explain in a funny way. You know what I'm saying? And so that forced me to be like, all right, if I can't recognize the type of joke that's in this bit, then it goes out. Like, I'm not using it. You know, it might be funny for a blog or for a Facebook post, but I'm not using it on stage. And so it kind of helped me raise my standards, because even if that happens again, I go back there and or anywhere and bomb, at least I'll be bombing knowing that I'm telling, like everything I'm saying is punched up, you know, as opposed to, oh, I've got this really funny concept where I compare these things that, you know, you won't think of comparing, and So I think that that helped. And also, too, I think kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier, where I think to be a comic, at least with a lot of black crowds, I think it has to, I mean, you've got your material, but you still have to call the room. There has to be a level of spontaneity, or at least seem like it. And every comic besides me made jokes about, like, the people in the front row. Like, I mean, not like in a, like, embarrassing way, but it was, like, clear that the jokes being told, at least some of them, were fresh. Like, they were being either off the top of the comic's head or had been prepared once he'd gotten to the show.
Right.
You know, so it kind of, that taught me a lot. And my joke writing got a lot better after that. And some of my best material jokes that I wrote, like, in the next couple weeks after that. So it was a good thing in long term.
Right. Yeah.
And but I mean, it was, I mean, definitely one of the worst shows, just because, having the guy get you off stage, and you know, the fact that I had cousins there, so. But then, you know, me and Brad, we went to chat a couple weeks ago, did Cutthroat Comedy. It wasn't at the Comedy Catch, so I'm not completely vindicated yet, but we go there, we win Cutthroat Comedy. They're going to have another Chattanooga show in July at the Palace Theater, so it's not...
it's not over.
Yeah, it's not over, but I'd like to get back on stage at the Comedy Catch. I think... I think my biggest thing that frustrated me the most was that I didn't realize the guy was giving me the light. Because if I'd known he was giving me the light, I would have just, you know what I mean, got off stage. So that was another lesson there.
Right.
So, but anyway, it was good. I mean, that happened. And then the other story is, you know, it's not even that bad. It's just I was at City Winery, and there was this girl that I kind of crushed on for a while. She and her friend show up at the show, and then I actually had a couple of other friends that I didn't expect. And it wasn't bad, but I was just for whatever reason, it was like City Winery is so nice that I think I was just I was more dressed up than I usually would be to do stand up. And I just wasn't quite as comfortable on stage, and I think it was obvious. And I didn't tell my jokes with very much confidence, and it just didn't go well. And I think that that night, that was like a, I didn't, you know, that wasn't the best night either, you know, so.
Right.
So, but yeah, those two stories are mine. And then what we need to do, maybe not next week, maybe next week, but we gotta talk about the good shows, the good experiences. Yes, yeah, for sure.
Because I think after you have a bad show, the absolute best thing to do is go to another show, because it'll probably be better. So it makes sense that next week or pretty soon we do a show, or we do a pod about the best shows we've had.
Yeah,
so
for sure.
So that'll be fun.
Yeah. Well, we're at that 44-minute mark.
Nice.
Anything else you want to add?
No, I think we covered it.
Yeah. I know I'm done confessing my embarrassing moments on stage. So.
Right, yeah. It was a cathartic for us to get it out there.
Yeah, oh, for sure, man. Well, all right, Garrett, man. I will talk to you. Wait, are you going to the show tonight? Are you going to the mic in the borough?
At the borough? I might be. I'm not sure yet.
Okay. We'll talk off air.
Gotcha.
All right. Later.